Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
When do we want it? When do we want it? When do we want it? When do we want it?
Justice. Now, 94.7 The Wave's ongoing pursuit to bring communities to unity.
Good evening and welcome. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Justice Now, Communities to Unity. Tonight, we're going to explore your right to vote, which you would think in a democratic country wouldn't even be an issue. But when our forefathers wrote the Constitution back in the 1700s, only white male landowners were given that right. In 1870, the 15th Amendment said that people couldn't be denied the right to vote because of their race, but those were only words. The white majority did everything they could to keep that from happening, including charging poll taxes, requiring blacks who had just been allowed access to education to take a literacy test. And if these methods didn't work to discourage black citizens, they used tried and true intimidation tactics, including violence and even lynchings. The list of those who lost their lives in this struggle is long and includes names like Medgar Evers, James Chaney, Michael Schwerner, and Andrew Goodman. You know the names. Pay attention to the chronology. Even death didn't discourage blacks from their movement. In the 60s, black Southern landowners used property bonds to bail out people who were jailed just for trying to register to vote, risking their land, their safety, and their lives in the process. Women were granted the right to vote in 1920, and in 1924, indigenous Americans, whose country, by the way, had been stolen from them in the beginning, were finally allowed to participate in elections. But it wasn't until 1965 that the Voting Rights Act was enacted to finally give blacks the right to vote. And in 1975, it was expanded to protect language minorities. In 2013, the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, and 23 states immediately created new obstacles to voting. And here we are today. Our government has failed to make the investments in elections to make sure that they are efficient and accurate. And we are faced with that fact as we get ready for one of the most important elections in our country's history. And so tonight on Justice Now, we will tell you why your vote matters. And joining me in the studio, two of my dearest friends, Greg Mack, who is one of our announcers here at The Wave, someone who's been very involved in the Black Lives Movement, and I'm sure is excited about being here tonight. How you doing, Greg?
It's always fun hanging out with you, Pat, and especially Deborah. And, you know, the Justice Now is just so important, what you are, you know, all the information you're giving out there, so... It's good to be here. We've got some great guests.
Yeah, we do. And we've got Deborah Howell with us as well.
And it's so important, Pat, what we're doing today, because it's a very exciting show about voting.
Tonight, we will tell you why your vote counts. Our very first guest this evening is Dean Logan. Dean is the registrar, recorder, and county clerk for Los Angeles County. It's the nation's largest, most diverse local election jurisdiction, serving more than 5.4 million registered voters. Additionally, Dean sits on advisory boards for the MIT Election Data and Science Lab, Auburn University's Graduate Certificate in Election Administration, and the California State University Northridge Master of Public Administration Program, where he also serves as a part-time instructor. He's a very busy man and about to get even busier as we get ready for a huge November election. We welcome you, Dean. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to see you again.
All right. First thing I got to ask you, you know, anytime you do something new, there's always, you know, a couple of little snags. And we changed the way that we vote in L.A. County. And after our last election, people were going crazy with all the problems that we had. What happened? And tell us, is it all fixed now?
Yeah, well, I think let's start with the latter part of that. We're on the road to having it all fixed. We know that this has to be a smooth election in November. The stakes are high. Things happened in some respects. Things happened well in March, but in other areas, what became very clear is in a jurisdiction this size is we had capacity issues. So I think that the vision of what we put together and kind of what led us to that, that's all still intact. I think that what we were faced with is kind of monumental changes that we didn't have a lot of data to prep us for. And now we've had that experience, and it's that kind of experience that you have on the ground that's tough to deal with. But we have to own up to it, and take the parts that worked really well and make sure that they expand and fix the parts that didn't work well. And most of those, the good news is we've done a thorough review of all that, and most of the issues, almost all of those issues, were really things about capacity, about technology, and making sure that we're ready to go. So they're fixable things. They're not things that are systemic flaws, but things that we can and will fix heading into November.
That's great to hear, Dean. Now, people still find it difficult, though, to find out how they can vote. They need information on registration. They need to know their options, and they need to know where their voting center might be if they're not able to vote by mail. Where should they start?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the other thing that is, you know, life has changed since the March primary. So we had the issues with the March primary, but then we literally days after that, the COVID-19 situation hit. So things are actually changing again before the general election this fall. And one of the most fundamental parts of that is that we will actually be mailing a ballot to every eligible registered voter in Los Angeles County. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't still have in-person voting options, because we know from our experience in March that even when you mail a ballot to many of our voters, there still is a desire to go and vote in person. And we also can't rely on, at least 100% rely on, the mail service to ensure that everybody has that opportunity. So what you're going to see between now and October, when we mail those ballots, and those, just so you know, those ballots go in the mail on October 5th. But in between then and now, we're doing direct mailings to voters. We're doing a mass media campaign to get the word out so that people know, even in these state of emergency conditions with the pandemic, that there will be the opportunity, that people won't have to make a choice between their health and safety and their ability to have their voice heard in this election. And so we'll be encouraging those who can to vote safely at home, use that vote by mail ballot, multiple options for how you turn that back to us. But we'll also be providing safe in-person voting options for several days leading up to the election on November 3rd for those who need that access, or who simply just have that desire to vote in person.
Hi, Dean. There's a lot of misinformation out there online, especially. It's not, you know, unusual for my mom to call me and say, "Hey, why are we being ordered to vote over here on this street? And I usually vote over here." And it's, you know, misinformation. You don't know if, you know, there were ads on there being bought by Russia or whatever the case may be. Where do people go? How do you stay informed on exactly what's going on? You guys have a site where would you tell people to go to?
Yeah, the best source of information in LA County for the mechanics of voting, so the when, where, and how to cast your ballot, really is our website, which is lavote.net. I also would refer people to the sample ballot that you get in the mail. So we mail prior to the election. Every voter gets a sample ballot. It has a list of all the contests and measures that are going to be on the ballot. It has pro and con statements for the ballot measures, and information on where those voting locations are. As you indicate, I think that's part of this kind of ability to change over time, is that we've now moved to a model in LA County where you don't have to go to a particular location to vote. You can actually go to any location that's open to cast your ballot. So the sample ballot will emphasize that, but we'll also be mailing to every registered voter a list of all of the locations and the days and times that those are available. So validating that through our website, lavote.net, and really sadly, we're in an environment where the politics have filtered into the mechanics of running elections. So the word we're trying to get out to voters is rely on the trusted sources of information about the administration of the elections, not about the campaigns, not about how you're going to make your decision on who to vote for, but about where to vote, when to vote, and how to validate that. And don't be afraid to ask those questions, because we want to be sure that everybody has the opportunity to cast a ballot in this election.
We know that a lot of people are going to be voting by mail. Can we talk about that a little bit? Why is it so controversial, and what is the truth? I've been reading things that say that a lot of mail-in votes are being thrown out for different reasons. Like they'll say, well, you should have had photo ID with yours. I don't think we have these kind of issues in California, but it certainly is something that's troubling to people across the nation.
It is, and it's the consequence of our decentralized voting model in this country. And again, sadly, as I said, the kind of the politics filtering into it, where you have elected officials talking at the national level about their perceived risks of vote by mail. The truth of the matter is, in the western part of this country, in California, Oregon, and Washington, we have had substantial number of voters voting by mail for decades, and it makes up a substantial number of the votes that are cast and reported. It is a safe and secure way to vote. We're fortunate in California that our laws favor enfranchisement, so favor the voter's ability to have that ballot cast. There are some key things that you need to know. On a vote-by-mail ballot, we do check the signature of the voter on that ballot envelope to the signature that we have on record. So there is that validation process. So we do like to remind people that when you sign that envelope, do that with intention. So think about how your signature appears on your driver's license, or how you would have signed a document like when you registered to vote, because there is going to be a comparison on that. Now, that said, if your signature doesn't match, or if you forget and drop it in the mail without signing it, we do have a process of notifying voters and giving them the opportunity to cure those issues, so they still have the opportunity to be sure that their ballot is counted. The other thing that we emphasize here is give yourself enough time to get that voted ballot back to us, and there are a number of ways you can do that. You can return it by mail. There is no postage required. Postage is paid. But we are seeing with the U.S. Postal Service that transit time, even local mail, is taking longer than it used to. So, don't wait till the last minute to drop it in the mail. Again, California laws have been changed to allow us that as long as it's postmarked by or on election day and received within 17 days of the election, we will still be able to count that ballot. But for those people, and we know a lot of voters prefer, they like that convenience of getting the ballot in the mail, but they want to put it in a ballot box when they vote their ballot. They don't want to send it back through the mail. So we have and are locating over 350 vote-by-mail drop boxes throughout the community in LA County. These are boxes out in your community where you can actually deposit that ballot and it'll come directly back to us. We'll go pick it up. You can also walk it into any of the in-person voting locations on election day or during the early voting period. The advantage there is you kind of get that community feel of going out to your voting location, but you don't have to wait in line to wait for your opportunity to vote. You can just go directly to the ballot box and drop off your ballot.
Yeah, and you can get your sticker. Very important. Got to have my vote sticker.
Yes, and your vote by mail ballot includes a sticker.
All right. Wear it with pride. So you know that every single vote is so super important this time, and you're working really hard on that. Can you tell us about Voting Solutions for All People, or VSAP?
Yeah, the Voting Solutions for All People initiative is really something that we've worked on in LA County for over a decade. And really, fundamentally, from the very beginning, it was about focusing on the voter experience. So putting aside the fiscal constraints, the regulatory constraints, and even the market constraints on voting systems, which are, by the way, pretty severe here in the United States, and saying, how do we design a system first that looks at it from the perspective of the voter, that when they walk in to vote or when they open that vote by mail packet, that it represents the significance of their vote, and that it also is streamlined in a way that is familiar with the way we do other functions. And so that's the idea of being able to vote at any location and voting on more than just a random Tuesday between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m. The reality is that the way we live our day-to-day lives isn't necessarily conducive to that anymore. So it's been about expanding those opportunities. The other thing that's really key here in Los Angeles County is the rich diversity of our community. So we offer our voting materials under the Voting Rights Act in up to 17 other languages beyond English. But in the past, that's really been approached kind of from the standpoint of just mere compliance. The law says you have to make it available, so you make it available. And if somebody needs something in another language, they kind of have to fumble through the process to get that. The Voting Solutions for All People flipped that so that every voting device that you go to cast your ballot offers any voter that opportunity to choose one of those languages and offers them to toggle back and forth, because we know that some voters, they're fine with reading the contest and the candidates in English, but when it comes to the complex ballot measures that are on the ballot, and by the way, there are 12 statewide ballot measures that are going to be before voters in November, those are complex issues, and being able to read those in your first language, your original language, makes a big difference in being able to have your voice heard. And then the final piece of that is also about accessibility, that voting systems have lagged way behind in terms of being able to meet the needs of voters with disabilities, senior voters. And so the new equipment that we offer now gives you the ability to adapt that to your needs. So you can change the font, you can change the contrast on the device. And if you have physical limitations, it's actually designed so that you can still have the security of the paper ballot, which is very important. But if you don't have the ability to physically touch that and put that into the ballot box, the device still allows you to mark your ballot, see that it's on the printed ballot form, and then deposit it into a secure ballot box right there on the same device. So those are really kind of the key features of that. Again, the vision is that this is a public process, and we wanted a voting system that was publicly owned and operated, but also that met the needs of our particular community.
Will immigrants be able to vote?
Immigrants who are citizens are able to vote, are able to register and vote, and that's important for people to know, especially in this community. And one of the other ways that California's election law is particularly voter-friendly in that respect is that you can now, at any of our voting locations, if you miss the deadline to register to vote, and in that case, you, of course, wouldn't have received a vote by mail ballot, if you're eligible, you can still go in on the day of the election or the days leading up to the election, register to vote, and vote on that same day. Same thing is true as if you've changed your address or anything of that nature. So to your point, even people who are just taking their oath of citizenship days or weeks before the election still have the opportunity to come in and register to vote and cast that ballot for the first time in this election.
Well, this is some great information, Dean. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today and sharing this. And once again, would you give us your website so people can know where to go for information?
Sure. It's lavote.net.
Thanks so much for joining us today. This is Justice Now.
We're going to join Deborah Howell on the soundstage right now with something I think you're really going to like. A look at some very, very exciting young people who are making some major moves in Southern California when it comes to voting and to the protest movement.
This is AJ. This is Fred Martin. And this is Ariana. And we're going to talk about the Compton Kids Club, some of the entertainment, and also some of the social justice factors that are you all taking on. So, Fred, this was the seed. This was your brainstorm. So tell us how it all got started.
I mean, really, honestly, as a kid, I grew up in Compton, number 9 out of 10 kids. I remember playing the saxophone. I was really, really good. They wanted to elevate me up to I was playing the recorder. They wanted to elevate me up to the saxophone. And it was $6 a month, and we couldn't afford that $6 a month. And I remember thinking then that if I ever made it at anything, I wouldn't let money be a reason why a kid couldn't pursue their dreams. So hence, you know, when I got a little older, it wasn't out of, you know, riches that I did this. It was out of heart and a need. You know what I mean? So I know kids need this. So that was really the seed that was planted as a kid that I didn't even know, you know, that inspired me to do this.
AJ, what kind of resources did Compton Kids Club bring to you?
I think it definitely brought forth a positivity. It brought forth just me stepping into this, seeing the community, everybody together, that comfortability with, you know, seeing people representing each other as like my skin complexion, the next person's skin complexion, and it becomes a family. And so I think it was that open door that like is a beautiful thing.
Tell us about some of your open doors online.
I think more so the Compton Kids Club and the new vote brought forth a new mindset for me when I didn't know the importance of voting and stuff like that. And it was just, you know, oh, you know, let's vote for this person because it was a trend or whatever the case may be. But now, stepping into this, I want to do more research. I want to understand what the importance is and how this affects me, whether it's for the primaries or not. You know, it all affects me. So voting in every level is important. And I didn't know that until now.
And you're 24?
Yes.
24. So you voted a few times?
I voted a few times.
How do you feel?
I do. I feel important because in the beginning, you do it because it's your first time to vote. You know, you can't do it until you're like 18. So you're like, oh, okay. And then you get to a point where it's like, okay, I voted already. But then it was like, no, like I need to keep doing this. You know, it's important. And so at the second time when I did it, I was like, this is going to make my mark. Everybody kept saying like, oh, it doesn't count. It doesn't count. But no, I'm like, it's going to count. So, yeah.
There's a lot at stake.
Mm-hmm,
a
definitely.
Lot at stake. Which brings us to you, Ariana. You're not quite able to vote yet, but doesn't keep you from being involved.
Yeah. So I'm 16 and I just like filed to like pre-register to vote, and that made me feel like so happy. So I was like, how do people who have the opportunity to vote feel? Because, you know, me growing up, my family wasn't allowed to vote, or like I grew up in a family that they didn't have the privilege to go out and vote. That's why I feel like it's so important for everyone who has that privilege to go out and really vote, because their vote matters. Like, think about everyone else who doesn't get to vote and wants to vote. So yeah, I just can't wait to be able to vote, but it was so exciting to be able to pre-register to vote and to learn more about the voting process. So once I'm finally there, you know, I'm educated and I'm able to help like the people around me.
I was going to ask, are your friends also equally engaged?
Yeah, it was just a really cool thing. Like, we grew out into this youth vote with people that we already know and are close to, and we're all learning together, which is helping us because we're able to go out and teach more of our friends, people who are not involved, get them involved. So it just becomes a really, and even if we don't know them, we become close to them, and we make new friends off of this movement. So yeah, it's really exciting to get to work with people you love.
And what do you think is at stake this November?
Well, I mean, I've just been getting really, like, educated about stuff. Like, people have to go out and see, like, everything that's going on right now. You, like, what do you want to do? We have two options. We can sit back and let these people run our lives and just be quiet, or we can get up, speak up, and get more involved making a change, because we can't do both. We can't sit back and then criticize other people's actions. So I just feel like there's a lot at stake, and we have to get up and get more involved, even at this young age, and then just educate ourselves.
Fred, if you could tell us a little bit about your voting initiative.
You know, it was co-created with the kids at the Compton Kids Club. If you look at the website, every piece of literature and research that was done was not done by me, it was done by them, and it is phenomenal. We also created the logo together, so they're very involved. But what we do is our mission is to pre-register 16 and 17-year-olds. And we also are registering, of course, the 36 million millennial and Generation Z voters that needs to take part in this as well. But what we do with the 16 and 17-year-olds, we teach them financial literacy. We're teaching them public policy, how to write their own legislation into a law, right? And then we're championing social justice, and we're championing environmental justice. We partnered with the Lakers. We were going into schools. One of our initiatives was to end the use of single-use plastic in schools. There are 76 or 78 million kids that use single-use plastic every single day. So we created an eco package with the Lakers Youth Foundation, and we were going into schools doing anti-bullying assemblies along with this environmental justice, and we would leave them with an eco package with stainless steel straws, reusable cutlery, reusable water bottles, and thermal lunch pails, where now you don't have to use, because what happens with this plastic at the end of the day? It's being burned, it's being thrown into the ocean, it's destroying our planet. So the youth vote is a new movement that is educating the youth on public policy, on financial literacy, as well as gun control, bullying, cyberbullying, and environmental justice. It is extremely powerful.
AJ, Black Lives Matter, what does it mean to you?
The movement itself is very important to me. I think it was a call to action, and now there are developments that have been made that I felt like my ancestors wouldn't believe, you know? I love quotes, and one of my quotes is like, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams, and the Black Lives Matter movement really put forth that fire and then underneath a lot of people who were not aware of, you know, what was going on in the community of African-Americans, or just Black people in general. And I think it's an amazing movement, you know. It was founded by two women, I believe, and it's the way it's just taken off and hit social media platforms all across the world. See, like when we were going through the pandemic and seeing like people do stuff in UK and Italy and China, I was like, oh my gosh, like the love is really here. So it's a huge movement, and I hope it's not just a trend. I hope it's something that lasts.
Ariana, how do you feel when you turn on the TV and you see protests, peaceful ones, all over the world?
I feel both empowered and then powerless at the same time, because it's like so cool to be able to go out and protest, and then more than that, you know, sign petitions, and then it's like you're like, okay, what's next? You know, you see these protests on TV and then you're like, okay, but what are we gonna do? So then you're like, I'm stuck, you know. But then you see you're signing all of these petitions, and then there's cases reopening, and there's these officers that are getting arrested. So then it's like you're doing something. So I feel like at the same time, really powerful, and then like excited and hopeful to see what's next, because like she said, like there's people all around the world who are finally listening and getting involved. So it's like something is really going to happen, and I'm just really hopeful.
I think we're all feeling it. It's an energy in the air, right, Fred?
Yes.
And if your voting initiative is successful and you get that turnout that you hope and foresee in November, what's going to change?
Well, I think, one, we need to get back to being respected across the world. You know, with the things that the administration that we have now, we've lost our luster. We've lost a lot of respect around the world. And I think it sets a foundation for us to put back some things in place where we are who we are supposed to be. You know, Ariana just said something that was important, that, you know, after the protests, what's next? Because we have to understand, change don't take place on a bridge. It takes place in little small rooms with powerful people, right? So we have to have a plan after the protests, you know what I mean? And I think now we're getting to the point where we recognize that there has to be plans in place, where we can't just respond to the sensationalism and the emotion of what's happening, but we have to have sustainable, practical solutions. You know, and right now, while people are listening, it is important for this movement to point people in the right direction to where those resources need to go, right? We cannot continue to respond to the bad police officer that's doing bad things. We have to point the resources to the policy that allowed him to be on the force. He shouldn't be able to take a psych test 20 times. They should be going to college at least 2 years. And what also happens is this, that we have police officers on our middle school campuses. We have police officers on our high school campuses. And where when I got into an argument or maybe a little fight with Johnny, now these kids are leaving the schools with felonies on their records, right? This is the systemic racism that we see. And then here is this kid that did something in the eighth grade. Now he's a respected taxpaying citizen in his community, but he can't apply to be on the police force to police his community because he got a felony in school. And so we have to point the resources to those areas. And I think that's when you're going to see the change, right?
I think you should run, Fred. That's what I'm thinking.
That's what I think.
Listen, is 2020, I'm going to ask each one of you, and that's the way we're going to end this interview. Is 2020 the tipping point?
It's the year of change. I think it's the year of clarity. I felt like in the past years we were being led to this point. And now it's time for us to like really take off our glasses and really see, you know, what's going on, because they were dirty before.
Ariana?
I feel like what she said, I feel like it's the year of change. Yes, so much stuff has happened. We don't know what's going to come after 2020. We don't know what our new normal is going to be. But I feel like there is a change coming. I'm, like I said, hopeful, and people are listening. So we do have to take action now. And then we have so much time in our well, we don't have that much, but we have time in our hands that we have to use right now while we're at home, and we can make things bigger, like with the youth vote. We can take these young people and educate them. So after 2020, we have all of this stuff creating, and I'm just, yeah, I feel like it's, there's going to be change this year.
This is the time, right, Fred?
Yes, ma'am.
You've seen a lot over your lifetime, but I think this is the year and this is the time. Thank you so much, all of you, AJ, Ariana, Fred Martin, for coming. I'm going to leave the final word to you.
We know all things work together for the good of them who love the Lord and who are called according to his purpose. When it rains, that next day is a very, very beautiful day, right? So you don't really appreciate that sunshine if you don't have rain. So what we have to learn, that God gave us tears, he gave us smiles, right? And both are important in our development. So during this time of pandemic and this time of social reform, there's going to be a great change that takes place if we learn, if we listen, if we can make those changes, right? So I'm not at all discouraged by those things, because you have to have that plan. I'm not discouraged by what we see, because, listen, the George Floyd killing was equivalent to Rosa Parks not giving up her seat. It sparked a catalyst like we've never seen before, and people are listening now. So it is important for us to now take advantage of this fact and make the necessary changes in ourselves. And I tell you, we definitely will. We will be the voices. We have Ariana, we have AJ, the rest of the Compton kids. We appreciate this opportunity with the Wave. When we band together like this, do things like this, change is coming.
You are meeting the moment, and the future is so bright. Thank you all for coming in. I think we will see that colorblind society in our lifetimes.
Yes, ma'am.
Pat Prescott, back to you.
Acclaimed journalist and talk show host Mo Kelly has been trending over the past couple of weeks after his controversial interview with Roger Stone. Greg Mack joins us now with Mo to talk about that and more.
All right. Thanks so much, Pat. We are sitting here now with Mo Kelly. Now, Mo Kelly of the Mo Kelly Show on KFI. Also, you can see him on Headline News, CNN, MSNBC, on the BBC when you're overseas. You can't get away from him. Let's get down to it.
Sure.
I don't think Roger Stone knows that you are a fourth degree black belt in Hapkido. Did I say that right?
Hapkido.
I don't think he knows when he said the words, and I wanted to make sure I got this right. I'm not really sure why I'm arguing with this Negro.
Well, the first three words are unclear, but arguing with this Negro
was enough.
Distinctively clear. And whether he knew anything about me as far as my personal background, my martial arts background, just how I comport myself, I don't know if he really knew me well enough. Otherwise, his tact after our conversation would have been very different. I'm going to conduct myself as a professional inside the conversation, and I'm going to conduct myself as a professional after the conversation.
Absolutely. Now, just for him to come out and say that, and then it makes you think back. Let's go back a little bit. I remember back in the 80s, Franklin Ajayi had a funny line where he was saying, you know, he got arrested for being, I'm going to say, black on a sunny day.
And, right.
And in today's world, you've got all the Karens.
Yeah.
And systemic racism, it's being talked about, which is a good thing. How do you see it going further? How can we get this dialogue going further?
I'm actually disappointed and dismayed that we haven't made more progress given where we were in the 80s. Some people thought, and I might agree with them, that we sort of glossed over the issue, or some people thought that we had arrived simply by the election of Barack Obama, when fundamentally the level of respect for African Americans had not increased. We saw this with Barack Obama. Even though he was elected president, his birth certificate was questioned. His educational achievements were questioned. And if you want to relate that to my conversation with Roger Stone, he disregarded all my professional achievements, all my educational attainments, to reduce me down to this Negro, as if that somehow was determinative of whether I was worthy of having this conversation with him. And if anything, it was enlightening and instructive as to where possibly we have not managed to go in race relations since the 1980s. Now, we can talk about how we relate to one another, race relations, and that's a separate discussion from systemic racism as far as institutionalized structures and foundations and things which are woven into the fabric of America, which impact us daily. We're still dealing with redlining on a certain issue level. We're still dealing with voter suppression on a certain level. So when we talk about racism, it's not just how we react and relate to one another, but also those structures and institutions which also confront us.
I don't think that you've noticed, but I have. A lot of our friends, our white friends, mm-hmm. have been calling saying, you know, I didn't pay attention that I was, you know, coming off that way. And how can I be a better person and address this more properly? Have you gotten that?
I've gotten that. Sometimes I think it's sincere. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I find it almost patronizing. It depends on the person or it depends on the actual approach. But I do appreciate allies. And let me be clear. Mm-hmm. I do appreciate when someone wants to at least be introspective, have some self-critical analysis, and also wants to be an advocate for African Americans. If we've seen anything which is different now than before, it relates to what's going on in Portland, what's going on in Seattle, what's going on in non-majority urban centers in America, where you have white folks who are out there protesting, marching in solidarity, in support. I would never discourage that. I would always be concerned as far as whether the message is getting muffled or whether the message is getting confused or obfuscated, but I would never, ever deny the need for advocates. I would never in any way do that.
One of the things that we're talking about on Justice Now this week is about voting, registering to vote. Not only just registering, but get out to vote, mail in your vote, however you got to do, whatever you got to do, vote. Your thoughts?
Well, that's fundamental to everything we do. It's one thing if we're going to march. It's another thing if we're going to kneel. It's another thing if we're going to protest in some other way. But if it's anything, and I say this against the backdrop of the laying to rest and lying in state of Congressman John Lewis, who was so instrumental in the passing of the Voting Rights Act. If everything that we do in a public sense doesn't move towards a piece of legislation or some sort of specific change, substantive change, it's all for naught. It's one thing if we see people holding up signs and placards and chanting and wanting justice to appear, but it doesn't mean anything if we haven't changed some of these structures, if we haven't changed practices, if we haven't changed policies, if we haven't changed laws. Then we're not actually helping anyone, and it does not prevent or preclude some of these things from happening again and again. Part of what is so important about legislation is the enforcement provisions within them, not only to address present grievances, but also to prevent other similar situations. And when you talk about voting, we can't talk about voting if we're not guaranteed that right to vote, if we're not guaranteed against these offenses which suppress our right to vote. We saw the video of people standing in line for hours, mm-hmm. and some mm-hmm. not getting that chance to vote. We saw what happened in North Carolina with the voter fraud as far as the ballot fraud. This is something which is very real and very present in America today.
You, your website, by the way, MrMoKelly.com. I was looking at some of your interviews that you've done on there, and I invite everybody to go check it out. Great interviews, man. You're fantastic. In this business that you and I both are in, do you feel that a lot is being done now to prevent systemic racism? What's your thoughts on that?
I don't think we as a whole, and this is not saying a particular generation or a particular group of people, we as a whole really understand what it means to have systemic racism, from the boardrooms to just simply looking at a person's resume and making a snap judgment on the sound of their name as to whether that person will get an interview, whether a person will be given a chance, a fair chance to buy a house in a certain neighborhood. All of that feeds into systemic racism. When I go to the bank, am I going to get a loan with an interest rate as someone who doesn't have a name like me, who doesn't live in a neighborhood like me? How does that play out? When I'm trying to get a car loan, all of those things figure into the equation of systemic racism, which makes it more difficult. When I go to school, am I going to a school, or my children going to a school, which has the requisite property taxes to make sure that school has the facilities, has the books, can pay the teachers well enough where that school can then prepare my children for college? Are we competing on the same level? All those things have to be taken into account if we're really going to talk about whether we understand systemic racism and actually want to confront it.
Thank you so much. We've got to toss it back over to Pat Prescott. Thanks, Mo.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg and Mo.
Right now, I'm going to introduce you to three very special young guests who I think are going to make you pretty excited about the future of America. They are representing the Brotherhood Crusade. The Brotherhood Crusade is a 50-year-old grassroots organization with a vision of improving quality of life and meeting the unmet needs of low-income, underserved, underrepresented, and disenfranchised individuals. And joining us in the studio today, we have Amir Casimir, who is going to Cal State University, L.A. We'll be in the class of 2024. Just graduated from Augustus Hawkins High School. I should say congratulations for
Thank
that,
you.
First of all. Thank you so much for being here. We also have Rufus Williams. Rufus is in the class of 2021 at Esteban Torres High School. And he also just recently got his insurance license.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's a hard test to pass. Congratulations on that. And finally, I get a chance to reunite with Asani Campbell. Asani is a class of 2020 Washington Preparatory High School. And she'll be going to Cal State LA in the fall. And congratulations to you, too. So happy for you.
Thank you. Nice to see you again.
It is good to see you as well. You know, I'm a big fan of the Brotherhood Crusade. We have their name has come up a number of times already on Justice Now as an organization that's one of the ones that, you know, they talk about defunding the police. This is the kind of organization you want to fund that is doing so much for young people. And I want to talk to you all a little bit, first of all, about Black Lives Matter and about your thoughts when you saw what started happening on the streets of America and the streets of the world, really, right after the death of George Floyd. And we'll start with you, Asani.
Well, first I thought to myself, like, what can I do now? You know, a lot of things are going on. It's basically putting me in a position where I need to start taking steps in order to change things for our community. So, you know, first thing I wanted to do was spread awareness on social media. I started protesting. I went to protest Hollywood, Melrose, Santa Monica, and I saw like the anger and the frustration of like what we go through, the systematic oppression, and like basically, you know, it's a lot to handle for me right now of everything going on, the coronavirus. You know, Black Lives Matter movement.
What about you, Amir?
For me, the Black Lives Matter movement, it resonated with me because it was an opportunity to really engage. Throughout my whole high school career, actually 4 years ago, there was another group of killings of black people, black men, that made people kind of wake up, and that sparked the Black Lives Matter movement to begin with. And that's what started me to do activism and social justice work. And for me, this was kind of just another call to action, an opportunity to engage different in a different way and be more deeply engaged in protests and in that type of activism.
Yeah, and for you, Rufus, you were involved in the protest too?
Protests, not the Black Lives Matter one. But we had a conversation with Governor Newsom, and I expressed like how angry I was. You know, I told him I keep coming to these things, talking. I'm like, what are you actually going to do? Because this keeps happening. It's like an ongoing thing. It's starting to seem like it's normal to just gun down a black man in the street. Like, it's inhumane. So also I had a interview with the Brother Crusade. You know, they recorded me, and I said the same thing. Like, It scares me. It scares my mom because she's like, I'm just turned 18. I'm a black young man. She's like, every time I go outside, she fears for my life. Every encounter with the police doesn't have to be, you know, turn out. She scares that if I encounter a police, she scares it's going to turn out like the things you see on TV. So it hurts, you know, it hurts to see that, like, you know, I'm not treated as some random other dude on the street. I'm treated as a threat. So yeah, it's crazy. It really blows my mind how I can frighten a man with a gun, like an unarmed young black teen in Los Angeles, California. It's crazy.
Yeah. I know all three of you are 18 years old and will be voting for the first time in November. Everybody's all registered, right?
Yes.
You're all straight with that?
Yes. I registered when I was 16.
Of course you did. Ahead of the crowd. But talk a little bit about voting, about why it's important for you that you are registered to vote and are going to participate, and what Brotherhood Crusade is doing to help get the word out about this 2020 election.
Well, it's important for me to vote because, first of all, I'm a black woman, and I'm a black woman living in America. And not only am I struggling being a woman, I'm also struggling being black. So a lot of things that are put in place for me is like to disrespect me. So in voting is so I can change that view, and also in educating other young females to vote and to basically get their voice and their truth across, because I mean, as he said, we're just going through too much to be feeling that. We need, voting is basically a way for us to communicate and let people know like we're done. We're done feeling this way. We're done going through this. We are tired of it.
I see.
And for me, like, I see like my mom, and I see my grandmother, and I see my great-grandmother, and all the things they had to deal with being a black woman. So like, you know, the journey is not, we have to continue that. We have to continue letting people know and letting them basically know our truth.
Yeah, we really do have to do that. There's a lot of work to be done. Are you excited about voting?
Oh yeah, that's like another trip into like adulthood. So yeah, I'm actually excited to vote. And the whole process is, I'm ready to do that. And also, you say, why is it important to me to vote? As I said before, you know, I can't just, tell Governor Newsom what is he going to do. I have to do my part also, you know, I have to vote the people in the right places who have the same mindset as me. So I feel like it will make me seem like I'm not about it if I can tell him this and not be about it myself.
So, exactly. Yeah. You know, with every right we have, responsibility goes along with that. So we have our responsibility to show up for that. What about you, Amir?
For me, voting is important because it's a reflection of different type of political works that I do. So I work with Brotherhood Crusade and various other nonprofits like the BSS Coalition and Social Justice Learning Institute and Youth Justice Coalition, all to do different types of work in L.A., around police brutality and around just justice for all. And voting for me is an opportunity to step out of that realm of organization and actual, you know, going up to the school board in person and just being able to write a ballot and put my vote in that way.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, the last thing I wanted to say was, you know, I have a couple of nieces and nephews who live in other places in the country who I've been having an ongoing discussion with about voting and about how important it is. And my nephew says, I don't see what I need to vote for. I don't see what difference it makes, whether it's Republicans, Democrats, or whatever. Nobody really does anything about our vote. What do you say to young people who would say that to you? Anybody?
I would say you have to think about it on a larger scale. You know, what if about like thousands of other people think the same way you? So those votes are not in count. So if you want to see something change, it wouldn't. You can't say so because you didn't vote. You can't complain about something you see on TV because you didn't vote for it. You know, you can't complain about Donald Trump because you didn't even take the time to vote for the next person. So I would say it's very important to vote and for your voice to be heard in a different way.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead.
I agree with you, Rufus, because like even throughout history, the reason why we had Barack Obama in the first place is because we decided to vote. We lost 7% of the black votes in 2017 when Donald Trump won because we decided not to vote.
For me, a young person who wouldn't see the value of voting, what I would say to them is that one person in a protest doesn't make a protest.
I see.
And I don't think that anybody would disagree that Black Lives Matter or other forms of protest have been ineffective. And so in the same way, you know, a vote is a drop in the bucket, and filling that bucket up is equality. And so being able to put in that vote or put in your drop or just, you know, have that little impact, it builds up over time, you know? And being able to, as a collective, come into that and identify that, even just as our generation, my generation, us three in this room, we all have different peers that we could reach out to that we know are going to vote. I'm sure that's more than the people who we know would vote 2016 election, right? People who felt discouraged in different ways. And so I think that the value of voting comes down to the power of the youth and the power of mass. And it's just, if as long as more people understand that there is value and they do the work and, you know, just be sure to interact and be politically engaged, then we have a potential to, you know, make a snowball effect, an avalanche, you know, change the system.
True, like,
yeah, when you don't take advantage of your right to vote, you also lose the right to complain about it. And you can be the change that you want to see in this world. And I see that as what you guys are doing. I just am so proud of all of you, Amir, Rufus, and also Asani. Thank you all so much for being here today. And we look forward to seeing you at the polls in November.
Ashe.
Thank you. Give our best to Sharice Bremond Weaver and everyone at the Brotherhood Crusade. You guys are doing a great job. Our final guest for this evening is Derek Johnson. Derek is a lawyer, a humanitarian, and he is the founder of the Mississippi nonprofit One Voice Incorporated. He also serves currently as the 19th president and CEO of the NAACP. And I know he's a busy man. We are certainly happy to have you with us this evening. How you doing, Derek?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I know you are busy. I know you guys have lots of initiatives going on, and one that's going to happen tomorrow night, I think, is really cool. We're talking about voting tonight, but we also believe the census is one of the most important things that's happening right now, that 2020 census. Tell us about your online census party.
We have an online census party to encourage people to fill out the census. There's only 9 questions that take less than 10 minutes, but it is the foundation of our democracy. The census is about money. If you are counted in your particular area, it allows policymakers to determine the allocation of federal resources. That's why the census are so important for our roads, bridges, schools, access to healthcare. All of those things are determined based on the taking of the census.
And that you're going to actually be filling out the census as a part of this event. Is that what's going to happen online?
We're going to have an upbeat conversation, music, and also share with people how easy it is to fill out the census form, why it is important. You know, for African Americans, we grew up knowing about this whole concept of 3/5 a person. And that was about the census count. It was Southern slave states trying to negotiate their slaves being counted, but yet not allowing those Africans to actually have rights. And the compromise was they could be counted as 3/5 so they can get the allocation of the federal dollars. That's how pivotal the census process is. And this year, we've never seen the census as politicized since that time of the 3/5 debate. So it's important for us to show up, be counted, so that our resources, the tax dollars that we put into our coffers, come back to the communities and the programs that mean so much to us.
Yeah.
Derek, you have another initiative I'm really interested in, Our Vote, Our Voices. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's self-explanatory. You know, in this moment of George Floyd and this awakening of corporate statements of structural racism, it's an opportunity for us to move from the peaceful protests in the streets to the power of voting in November. We must go from protest to power to policy. And that is the true trajectory to make change happen. It's a beautiful thing to see black, white, young, old, male, female in the street protesting, saying Black Lives Matter. It's the next step is to move that energy to the ballot box in November. And from that ballot box in November, make sure we have policymakers who get elected to have the values that represent our needs and interests and implement public policy to address systemic and structural racism.
How is that working with you guys? Since you brought that up, Black Lives Matter is doing a situation, and then, of course, the NAACP. Are you guys putting your efforts together and working together or so that you can cover more ground? How do you guys work together?
To be clear, so NAACP, we are 111 years old. We're in 47 states, 2,200 units across the country. There are no other organization our size. The statement that Black Lives Matter is a statement of fact. There are many groups who have formed under the rubric of Black Lives Matter, and everywhere they exist, that partner, we seek to partner because that's our community, those are our people. There is no competition to social justice, and the goal here is moving people from protest to power. That should always be the focus, and never this deficit us against us in any conversation when it comes to the Black community.
You know, Derek, we have seen incredible youth involvement recently, which has been great for all of us. I think everybody's pretty excited about that. As a legacy organization as yours is, that's been around for over 100 years, how do you appeal to youth? How do you get young people involved in your vision for the future for the NAACP?
Two things. Movements have always been intergenerational. They've always been the energy of the young people, the wisdom of the elders, and a continuity of those who are in between age. And for me, when I walked in the door, because I knew many of the Black Lives Matter community young people, most of them start under a group called Freedom Side, and I funded a lot of that. I went and got one of their peers to head up our Youth and College Division, young lady Tiffany Lofton, who's now 30, from LA, full of energy, know the landscape. She heads up our youth operations. And in that, we are involved across the country. If you've seen what was taking place in Minneapolis, one of the key spokesman leaders was a 28-year-old branch president of Minneapolis NAACP. If you understand what took place with Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia, and the first voice out of that was a young 26-year-old state president for the NAACP, Woodall. And so we are young, we're old, we are cripple, and we are a straight walking. We represent the Black community in all of our beauty. It is not young versus old, it's all for all. And that's how we should approach these systemic racist structures that we must overcome. Mm-hmm.
Coming up on August the 28th, you guys are doing a virtual march in Washington commemorating the 57th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech. How can we participate?
Please go online, sign up. We want people to commemorate that moment. You know, John Lewis was one of the Big Six. He was one of the speakers representing the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And the civil rights movement for me is something that's dear, because many of the participants at that time have been mentors of mine. I knew John Lewis. I know many of the remaining SNCC personalities. And if you ever want to learn the history, go to SNCC Legacy Project, and many of their documents are .org is on that website. Wonderful people. It is important for us to remember what has happened in the past as we prepare to move into the future.
You're guiding the organization through this incredible time in history. As a lifelong activist, Derek, how do you see this moment in time?
It's a period of opportunity. It's a period where, when you have as many white people in the streets saying Black Lives Matter, we've never seen this before. When corporations begin to say that they need to assess how they have been doing things and talking about Black Lives Matter, we've never seen corporations acknowledge that structural racism exists. We are in this juncture of opportunity if we seize upon it. We can either use November to move into the future by electing policymakers who represent our needs and interests, or we can pause in this moment, have beautiful statements, recognize the protests, and go back to where we were. It's the opportunity juncture. We have to decide what direction we're going to go in. It is my job to try to move everybody into a future, make sure the outcome of the November elections, state, local, federal, represent the energy we see in the street, so we can have the future that we're all entitled to. No longer should we rob our young people of futures. No longer should we put our elders at risk. No longer should we tolerate an unjust society. We must make what others think as impossible possible.
You know, I wanted to ask you one last thing, Derek, just about the whole idea of voter suppression. I mean, we've seen it throughout history. We talked about it earlier and about how involved the NAACP has been in creating the opportunities for us to even, you know, I mean, we had the emancipation in the late 1800s. It wasn't until 65 that we were able to vote. And people have been working overtime to figure out ways to continue to suppress the vote. Regardless, talk about voter suppression and what can we do about it to make sure that our vote is protected in November?
Well, first of all, when we fight, we win. The problem is we have not been fighting enough. And when it comes to vote suppression, the number one thing to overcome vote suppression is vote turnout. We got to get as many people out to the polls, because elections are won in inches, not miles. And as many tools and barriers they try to put in front of us, we need to come out of mass and knock them down. But NAACP and our partner organization, we're going to be filing lawsuits. We're going to be identifying where they bubble up. But at the end of the day, it's about the turnout. It's about getting as many people out as possible, making sure our voices are are as loud as possible, and a voice in a democracy is the vote. Leveraging our collective currency called our vote to make sure we tear down all the barriers that people are putting in front of us. One last thing with that, we're winning. That's why you see such an aggressive approach to stop it. When we fight, we win. Let's carry on to with this fight.
Well, we're excited about being in the fight with you. We're going to let all of our listeners and the whole WAVE family really know about all your great initiatives. We plan to participate in them and take part, and certainly appreciate the time that you have spent with us today on Justice Now.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for being here, Derek.
Thanks.
Derek Johnson, he is the 19th president and CEO of the NAACP, and he got me a little excited there, but you know, it's kind of nice to see the synergy that is developing, how we are coming together as a unit to work on all these things.
I'm really glad you asked the question about how do they work with or against Black Lives Matter, and it's really all one movement, and they're sort of the umbrella.
I never felt they were against. I was trying to figure out the parallel.
Yeah.
You know, because the Black Lives Matter seems to be younger. And so it was really good to hear him say, oh, no, we are one. You know, we are all working together. That makes me feel real.
Yeah, and to see the young people he's talking about who are really involved in the NAACP and in the movement, because no one group is going to do this alone. And I mean, I think this is the whole point of Justice Now. We're looking at solutions to these issues, and we're looking at ways to unite our communities. I mean, as long as we are talking at each other instead of really engaging and listening to each other, nothing real is going to happen.
And it's all about passing the baton to the next generation. And I feel like we're going to be in better shape with them in charge. I really do.
Absolutely. And then watching the kids earlier on the show, what a great show, Pat. Good job.
Good job to you guys.
Justice Now.
Thank you all for being here for this. And just one other thing I wanted to mention, you know, as Derek was talking about the census, something that is so important that I think a lot of people are overlooking. I'm glad some of the young people are being engaged in that. There's census workers going on knocking on people's doors. But this is at the heart of voter suppression. Mm-hmm. You know, keep people from participating in the census. They won't be represented.
Right.
Which is why we want everybody listening right now to tell everybody about this show, and also to look at our resources that we'll have for you after the show. Books to read, movies to watch, links to voter information, everything you need to get going and get mobilizing for the best and biggest turnout in history.
Definitely. And for those of us here in Southern California, LAVote.net. It is where you need to go for all the information, to sign up, to vote. Make sure that you're registered. And if you're not, you can go ahead and register now. But as Dean Logan told us earlier, we're in good shape here in California. They are taking care of the vote. We're going to all get mail-in ballots if you'd like to use those, but you'll also have an option to go into the polls to drop that into mailboxes that are going to be all around that will be for that purpose. So we are getting you ready for the vote, and we will continue to do that. We want to thank you so much, all of our guests here this evening, our wonderful crew, Cody and Carlos, and also Brian Holt, Genesis De La Cruz, and Ralph Stewart, and all the people who have helped to make this possible. We'll see you in a couple of weeks again for another episode of Justice Now, communities to unity.
94.7 The Wave.
Justice Now.
On 94.7 The Wave. Play 94.7 The Wave on your smart speaker or watch every episode at 94.7thewave.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.